David Begno of CBS was in Puerto Rico before Hurricane Maria hit on September 20th. Then he reported for 2 weeks straight, posting videos on Twitter and dispatches to the network, tracking the logjam of aid stuck in ports, the snaking lines for water, the utter chaos at the San Juan airport. In response, Puerto Ricans of the diaspora have been nominating him for honorary status as one of their own. After a short break, he's back on the island, still reporting. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bob.
We're speaking on Tuesday. What's the situation today?
Just as dire as when I left. I just got off the phone with a police officer in Ponce on the southern part of the island who says that there are elderly people who are walking for more than an hour to find food and water and standing in line to wait for it. And what they're getting isn't enough to keep an adult satisfied with enough nutrient for more than a day or two.
This is not 3 days after Maria, it is 3 weeks. Is there any sign of progress on infrastructure, moving aid back and forth, electric power, and so on?
Well, let's start with this. A majority of the island, roughly 90%, doesn't have power. The U.S. government, with the help of FEMA, was working to restore as much of the power grid as they could as quickly as possible. A thunderstorm rolled through about 72 hours ago and wiped out the progress that was made. That's how delicate and dilapidated this infrastructure is. I would tell you there's a feeling that things are somewhat more desperate today than when we left 5 days ago. Okay, you're talking about a governor who has told congressional leaders that they could be on the brink of an economic collapse, right? He has said there's going to be a liquidity crisis if something isn't done soon. Damage estimates are, you know, one estimate is upwards of $90 billion. The governor is asking for 4.6 right away. They're starting to worry about things like disease spread right now. There are still hundreds of people on this island, civilian Samaritans, who have reached out to us, who have said, I'm here, I'm trying to help, but we have no help to give them because we are here with the good heart and the manpower and the elbow grease, but we haven't seen FEMA. We haven't seen the military. And what we are seeing is people who are going to the grocery store and getting 6 bottles of water and a few snacks. That's it. Listen, the mayor of San Juan, who's been very critical of what the federal government is doing, opened up an MRE for me last night and what's called a breakfast, lunch, and dinner box. And she actually praised FEMA. She's like, this is good. But when you look in the box, Bob, a grown man might eat it for breakfast and lunch. That's it. But it's supposed to be breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it's for one day. Let me give you some numbers, right? Because you hear all the broad strokes about how bad it is. This is what it's like number-wise. There are 350,000 people living in the capital of San Juan. The mayor says half of them need food and water. Not for a day, not for two, but for the foreseeable future.
You're not new to the disaster beat. You've said this is the first you've covered where the emergency is so endless. Is it because the storm was so bad, because the island was so ill-prepared and fragile to begin with, because the response from the federal government and the military has been lacking? Which?
When I was in Houston for Hurricane Harvey, civilian Samaritans from Louisiana and Austin and North Texas and Arkansas and Mississippi and North Louisiana drove in immediately. And what I saw was the civilian Samaritans who were doing as good a job as the federal government, but I would argue, if not better. That's from our reporting on the ground. There's nowhere to come from here. Unless you're on the island, this is all you got, right? So whatever was prepared ahead of time is what they started off with. Now, it's been 20 days. People have arrived, and people are messaging me saying, hey, I heard what was needed, so I booked a ticket and I came from California or Odessa, Texas, or Baltimore or New Jersey or New York. But I just spoke with a woman whose husband is a veteran. He's on the western part of the island with 11 other veterans, and they put out something of an SOS. They said, we have run into red tape. We need supplies to hand out. We are here and we want to help, but we can't find the help. We can't find the help. And when you talk to FEMA, they tell you we're doing our best. And look, I've met the FEMA people. They seem to have the best intentions, but there are 16,000 of them. There were more than 30,000 in Houston for Harvey. Why can't they get more? That's not a question I'm asking. It's a question that people on the ground here are asking. Look, a lot of has been made about the politics, right? The president calling out the mayor of San Juan, the governor and the mayor of San Juan having a back and forth. Let me say this, according to our reporting, nobody's talking about politics.
The administration has painted Carmen Yulín Cruz, the mayor of San Juan, as kind of politically motivated nag. FEMA's director, Brock Long, said just Sunday on the morning public affairs shows,
"We filtered out the mayor a long time ago. We don't have time for the political noise. The bottom line is that we are making progress."
I'll tell you, I went to her last night and I said, "What's your response?" And she said, "You can filter me out all you want, but I'm not going to start saying what they want me to say.
I'm not going to play nice because I'm a woman and I'm supposed to play nice because we're here in the fight for our life." You see what the subtext of that is? If you don't criticize, then you'll get help. So does that mean that the only ones that are getting help are the ones that are playing nice or shutting up?
She has seemingly been undistracted by the pushback that she's getting from the federal government and others on the opposing political spectrum. She seems very focused, and she's got a lot of help and resources here. And most of the help and resources, according to the mayor, that she feels satisfied with are coming from non-governmental organizations and the private sector.
You have become a de facto fixer. When you talk to the governor about supplies at the airport, the governor makes things happen.
I believe you. I'm just saying, we just left 15 minutes ago, and there are people who have not had a sip of water in 36 hours.
I understand, and that's why immediately I'm taking action, and I will, as soon as we finish the interview, make sure that they're on their way.
It seems that you're also being a go-between from people and places in Puerto Rico with FEMA. The mayor of San Juan herself has tweeted for you to intervene with FEMA.
And it's almost awkward. I mean, I woke up Sunday morning and the mayor had put out this SOS tweet, this desperate tweet, and she tagged me in it. And then all of a sudden on Twitter, you have hundreds, if not thousands of people that are reaching out saying, "Did you see it? What can you do?" That kind of stuff. It was another important reason why we had to be here. It's important for journalism to be here because in this day and age of that term fake news, as the president calls it, the best of journalism is making things happen here. When we pick up the phone, we have no trouble getting the answers. I don't know why. I think the governor has seen that, you know, he sat down on a table in a conference room with bad lighting yesterday and talked to me for 10 minutes while I held a phone up in front of us. People are craving direct access, and we are doing everything we can to get it. And for whatever reason, it seems to be working. The direct access is necessary because the lack of communication here on the island is unprecedented from what I've ever experienced on a national disaster. And it's crucial. I get thousands of messages a day from people who are desperate for information.
David, much of your reporting, probably most of it, has not been on CBS's air, but on Twitter, where you were publishing, you know, full video reports, including your big scoop about aid shipments being just stranded.
"Oh, we're at the port here in San Juan, and we wanted to see where's the food, the supplies, everything that's needed. We got here, and here's what we were told. There are more than 3,000 shipping containers here at the port, which are just sitting here. It's got everything they need, but nobody's showing up. The governor of Puerto Rico says they're having trouble reaching the truck drivers."
First of all, let me ask you about those. Is there evidence that they have finally begun to get distributed to the 70-plus municipalities on the island where they're needed?
Yes, we've seen the trucks pulling out of the port. There are more truck drivers arriving to deliver the aid. And let's remember, those shipping containers that we found at the port that were so maddening to see sitting there, those were meant for grocery stores, right? Those were meant for local businesses who needed to have them delivered and weren't getting them. FEMA, to FEMA's credit, went in and started buying it up and saying, "Listen, we can't wait. We'll buy those supplies and we'll ship them out." But yes, we have seen those supplies start to move a lot faster. But as much as we talk about the progress being made, Bob, all I keep hearing from people is it's not happening fast enough. This is coming from mayors, police officers, people on the ground. I talked to a priest last night who's in an area 30 minutes outside San Juan who says depression is starting to set in among the desperate people.
One of the jobs of a reporter in your position is to find out what is true, also to find out what is not true, but which has found its way to the rumor mill. You've, you know, spent some time debunking false rumors. Can you tell me why it matters to do that as much as it matters to say what is going on?
Rumor on this island has stoked fear and paralyzed progress. I'll give you an example. We kept getting all these harrowing reports of bodies floating and caskets unearthed in Lades. And so we asked the team to go there. We sent a producer, a camera crew, and they came back. Come to find out, there were no bodies floating. There were no caskets unearthed. And there was a police officer actually at this graveyard where apparently all this, you know, this horrific scene was, who was actually turning people away saying, hey, listen, there's nothing to see here. So not satisfied, I went to the man who's the head of public safety for the island. And he said, listen, we have to clear this up. He was almost angry that we were asking. And so I said, stand right here. And I got my phone and we shot a 10-minute video. And the next day he came to me and he said, you don't know how much that video helped to clear up some of the confusion and quell all these rumors that were going around. Since then, there have been endless rumors about the spread of third world diseases and all this kind of stuff. And so the messages from people are coming in like bullets being fired at you. In this emergency situation where people are trying to get the basic necessities, and I'm trying to find out why the government, in combination with the federal government, seems to be unable to adequately meet those needs. In the middle of that, you're also trying to run down and fact check all these other different angles.
You talked about Samaritans. You may be Samaritan number one because of your broadcasts and your Twitter feed. And the stories you've broken, you have come to be regarded, you know, as something of a saint. In New York, there are even candles with decals of you, you know, in full saint regalia. This is an unusual position for a reporter to be viewed as, you know, kind of an extra governmental institution unto yourself. How do you deal with that?
It's unusual and it's a bit uncomfortable. This is not about me. But I will say this, I have in my career not experienced one story that felt so effective in terms of the job that journalism can do, right? Bob, I just came here because it was another hurricane and that was my assignment. But what has happened is the best of journalism has been able to do the best of what journalism can do. And that is highlight injustices and hold people accountable. I'm not doing anything that another journalist couldn't do. There's nothing special about me or what I'm doing, but I'm doing it relentlessly, consistently, doggedly, and we don't plan to stop.
David, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
David Begno is a news correspondent for CBS.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.